This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Happy Monday, people. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One Bills Live is the show to which you are listening. Glad to have you with us here until 3 p.m. And plenty of stuff going on over this weekend, not only with the team, with rookie minicamp, but also locally with the Remembrance Day, knowing it was the one-year anniversary of the tragic racially motivated shootings here in our city, where we lost 10 people of our community. And important to remember them over the course of the weekend. The Bills, obviously, a big part of that. Steve, a part of that as well, in concert with Bruce Smith, who was kind of spearheading the Aaron Salter memorial event. So you were over there, right?
Yeah, it was good. It was Delaware Park 5K half marathon. People started running the half marathon at like 7 a.m. It was a beautiful day. Bruce was there. Bruce said a few things that were really, really appropriate, really, really good. And it was nice. A lot of people showed up and a really good turnout. And I was proud of the city once again. It was good. Really good. I was happy to be a part of it and honored to be there.
I unfortunately was unable to attend. I was out of town moving my daughter out of her dorm room and into an apartment in Manhattan in a walk-up. With furniture involved.
That's a hard city to move.
It's not easy.
It's not easy to get around.
Because a lot of times you can't find a parking spot, and you want to be as close to the front door as you possibly can if you're moving furniture. So we're double parked. Somebody's got to stay with the truck. We got to go upstairs and move the stuff, this, that, and the other. We got to look out for the meter maids because they are on it down there, man. They are ticketing things left and right. We ended up getting one ticket, but we did the math, and we figured with all the free parking we did of our own volition, we probably made out in the end.
It's a math problem.
It is, and it was 85 in the city over the weekend. We did not smell good at the end of either Friday or Saturday.
Gorgeous
when all our work was done.
Gorgeous weekend here in Buffalo as well. Lots going on. I mean, I think more in Buffalo we do this probably more so than any other region, or like some of the northern regions do. You spend so much time inside during the winter.
Oh, it's like hibernation.
And you come out, and you've got all the stuff you want to do, and anything that you want to get done outside, you schedule in, you know, at this time of year, from here on away through September. Every single weekend has like five things on it.
Oh, yeah.
Five, not two, five. And you got to like pick and choose because you want to go do all of them because, you know, and I think more so than any other region, we here in Buffalo appreciate the weather.
Take full advantage of it.
Right. We're like our favorite season is the next one, right? We're always looking forward to, you know, the good stuff the fall brings, the fun stuff we do in the wintertime and all that stuff. And certainly the summer's no exception. I mean, you plan stuff, you know, not forget weddings and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the festivals and concerts and, you know, carnivals and get-togethers and openings and close, you know, all this stuff. Amazing stuff. And so this was the very tip. You know, Mother's Day this weekend was, you know, the cherry on top of everything. But once again, we had like five things we had to do, you know, and it's going to be like that. We start going over the calendar. It's like,
Hope all the mothers did have a nice Mother's Day yesterday, got family around you and enjoyed it. So hopefully all the Mother's Day brunch is like the big thing, at least for my wife's family. And I know you have a big family, so you're kind of in the same boat on this. You have upwards of 20-something people cramming their way into a establishment here in Western New York trying to get a brunch set up. And I mean, it's a lift, man. When you've got a big family, as I know you do, my wife's family's big, that is a heavy lift. I'd like to make a reservation for 20. Come again?
Yeah. Right.
Like, I mean, don't get me wrong. Most of these places are happy to take the business.
Sure.
But,
you got to get in early, though. You got to know. It's got to come.
My father-in-law made that reservation probably like 6 weeks ago.
We did the same thing. Had 20 of our family into the place, and I told you this. I pulled the ultimate grandpa move. So we got seven grandkids. I'm sitting at the table with my two sons and their wives and my wife, and then the seven grandkids are there as well. None of them are over 7 years old, right? Yeah. So I got a – I mean, it's Munchkinville, right? But I pulled the power move. So I go off. I go to the buffet for – you know, it's buffet.
Well, wait a second.
Know.
So the kids are set up. They got their eggs and bacon.
So I go – before anybody even budges, where it was time to eat, so Grandpa takes off, gets a plate of food, prime rib, pork loin, the whole thing. I mean, I did it. Come back, and you know, you've seen me eat, right? I'm done.
Yeah.
That's fine. So then I sit there, and while I'm eating, they're getting the kids wrangled, right? They're throwing out the,
getting,
you know,
their plates set up.
All, you know, they're cutting their food for them and all that. You know how it is, right? I sit there and watch them. I let them get started. Then I'm done. So Grandpa goes back to the dessert thing. And Grandpa comes back and sits down with two, like, big, huge slice of lemon cake and chocolate, you know, like the layered cake, you know, the wedge. I got two of them. I got to sit down right in the middle of the grandkids with cake.
While they're eating eggs and bacon.
It was such a power move. I loved it.
I could picture the looks on all their faces. They kind of turn their heads towards Grandpa and be like, where did he get that?
Right. So you can imagine the look I got. From
I don't want it.
Various individuals.
No bacon for me. I want cake.
<They're> like, great. That was great. That was a power move.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Well, yeah, you're at a time in your life where you can pull those kind of moves.
Right? But I'll say this too. There's something to be said for a 3-hour brunch. That's what it took us. Three hours.
Ours typically don't go that long. It's usually about two.
It was 3 hours.
That's a lengthy one.
3 hours. But it was up and we were up walking around and stuff too. I mean, it's a big place. We were outside a little bit too. After we finished eating, we kind of took a walk and worked it off a little bit, but still.
Yeah, you do have to walk that off.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the weather cooperated, so that was good. So hope all the moms had a good Mother's Day yesterday. As we mentioned, the Bills had rookie minicamp over the weekend. So Buffalo's draft choices, their undrafted free agent signings, and some tryout players all on hand for the 3-day minicamp, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And by the end of it, there were some tryout players who were signed to contracts. Most noteworthy among them was defensive end Shane Ray, who has 4 years of NFL experience. He's a former first-round draft choice of the Denver Broncos and a former teammate of Von Miller as well. He's been out of the league for almost 4 years. His last season was in 2019. Best season was his rookie year when he had 8 sacks. So the Bills take a flyer on a guy who will no doubt be motivated to revive his pro career. So, you know, showed he still had something in the tank over the course of the weekend, and, you know, they'll take a look at him a little bit longer now through OTAs.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see. Obviously, he's, you know, the guy – when you get picked that high, you got some measurables, right? And certainly that doesn't completely disappear overnight. But, yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, I've always said this, too. When you get drafted, particularly as a first-rounder, it's harder to get into the league than it is to stay there. And sometimes somebody will come along, and it's harder for him to stay in the league than it was to get drafted. And for whatever reason, you know, Shane Ray being one of those guys, it'll be interesting to see how it goes for him.
Yeah.
Because you're right. I mean, there's a lot in that has nothing to do with football.
Yeah. A lot of times it's injuries. Sometimes there are other circumstances. And
opportunity.
Well, right.
Everything.
And two other players that got signed to contracts coming off the tryout weekend, linebacker Traven Howard, former seventh-round pick of the L.A. Rams in 2018. Here's an example of that, Steve. He's been largely injured each of the last 3 seasons, but he does have playing experience, an outside linebacker by trade. And some might remember Traven Howard, probably the biggest play of his pro career, was the INT he had in the NFC title game to send the Rams to the Super Bowl after the 2021 season. So he's got some playing experience, so he's going to get an extended look. And I would tend to think, Steve, that if Dorian Williams becomes a firm competitor in the middle linebacker competition, that leaves another empty spot at outside linebacker behind Matt Milano. And that's where Traven Howard may be able to make the most of the opportunity he's getting now. So it'll be interesting to see.
We continue to be confronted by changes because of the absence of Leslie Frazier and the presence of Sean McDermott as defensive coordinator, moving over from the head coaching spot and doing both things. I don't know that it's going to be an overhaul of the defensive philosophy or scheme, mm-hmm. but it's going to be different, particularly when you don't have a guy like Tremaine Edmonds in there who is, you know, is really kind of, you could chisel him in stone that he was going to be on the field.
Right.
That changes things for the club. And until they find a guy or evolve into a rotation or however they're going to handle that position, we don't know. So all the stuff that happens around that, we're kind of guessing at, right? So I think it's going to be different. I think the defense is going to look different.
I think it will look somewhat different, and I think it'll be called differently as well, obviously, because you have a different person calling it. But I think the style in which McDermott's going to call it will look in stark contrast to what we saw last season. Third player signed off a tryout was running back Isaiah Bowser, productive back at Central Florida last year with 16 touchdowns in 14 games. 5'11", 217 was his weigh-in at the pro day. Ran a 4.59, 4.28 short shuttle, 35.5-inch vertical. So there's some explosion there. So he, too, has earned himself a longer look than just as a tryout player over the weekend. And we've seen this before from the Bills. Even there have even been tryout players that maybe didn't get signed coming off rookie minicamp weekend, but then all of a sudden they're looking to make a practice squad addition in mid-September, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, that guy was one of those tryout players back in May. So they don't forget these guys even several months later when they have, you know, their contingency list of players at certain positions.
They're really good about not having, I don't know what, like fan, like you and I and fans and stuff, we have a hard time with recency bias. That's why a guy like Shane Ray for us, everybody, like we've thrown, that guy's like thrown overboard already by most casual fans, been out of the league since 2019, that kind of thing. They don't do that. They go back and they check on him. You know, are you in shape? And he goes, yeah, I've been working out. I'm really looking for an opportunity. Oh, well, come on in. That kind of thing. And so that's why you get into the season and fans are all caught up in what's going on today. And that whole side of the building over in personnel, they got a list that's never ending.
Yeah.
It's never ending.
If anything, it's getting longer and longer.
It's hard to get to take names off it, let alone forget about it.
The other bit of Bills news, the preseason schedule is set in stone in terms of times. We knew the dates for the weeks in which they would be in the preseason, but we have dates and times now for Buffalo's preseason schedule. It will begin at home August 12th, 1 p.m. kickoff against the Colts. That is the only home preseason game. That will also be the Kids' Day game, since it's the only home preseason game. So you can go to BuffaloBills.com for more information on Kids Day, but that's August 12th, 1 p.m. kick. Then August 19th on the road at Pittsburgh, 6:30 p.m. kick. So that's a night preseason affair. And then August 26th, the preseason finale, another 1 p.m. kick at Chicago. So two road preseason games, the preseason opener at home, August 12th.
Yeah, they haven't said anything yet. I imagine that's kind of the Kids' Day
game. No, it is.
Yeah, right?
It is.
Okay, so the 1 o'clock on Saturday is spectacularly fun. I mean, you can't miss it.
Yeah, they open the gates. Not the gates. They open the parking lots at 9 a.m. with all the stuff they've got in the parking lots.
Yeah.
That's a fun day. For the kids.
Fun day.
Yeah. So a lot to do before you even
it's hard
to enjoy the game.
And for some season ticket holders, well, you know, I mean, I'm not telling the Bills fans any of this. It's great to get your kids acclimated and take them to a game that's not a regular season game in the middle of the winter or whatever. It's
going to get good weather.
It's just a little bit more convenient.
Yep. Kids are out of school.
Kids' atmosphere. Kids are out of school. You know, a lot of things going for us. It's a fun day. And it is a very different game than a regular season, not just because it's a preseason game, but because of the atmosphere and the fans themselves.
Right. Let's go around the NFL now. There are some AFC East notes to bring you up to speed on that took place over the course of the weekend and into the early part of Monday here around the NFL, brought to you by Kaleida Health, the official healthcare system of the Buffalo Bills. And the Dolphins, realizing they did nothing to improve their offensive line in the draft, signed New England Patriots free agent offensive tackle Isaiah Wynn. The former first-round pick was a full-time starter for the Patriots the last four seasons, but only played one full season in those four due to a number of injuries. He has tackle and guard experience, could compete for the starting right tackle spot with Dolphins former first-round pick Austin Jackson, who has largely been a disappointment in his time in the Miami uniform. So it'll be interesting to see how that training camp competition pans out. I know the Dolphins only had four draft picks to work with, Steve. It still stuns me that they did nothing for an offensive line that is still, in my estimation, pretty thin and not uber talented.
Right. We learned the lesson. I don't know whether we talk about it all the time about Brandon Bean learning a lesson early on in Josh Allen's career about how to support a young quarterback. Mm-hmm. They don't forget, they don't regress. The Dolphins just have, I'm with you. Four picks, I mean, to me, that's when you really go out on a limb and say, listen, we gotta get better in that spot.
Yeah.
Right? You gotta get better.
They haven't hesitated in adding weapons to the offense. But offensive line, I mean, it's not like they haven't used high draft choices there. They just haven't panned out, I think, the way that they wanted. First-round pick on Austin Jackson, second-round pick on Liam Eichenberg. I think Robert Hunt was a third-round pick. So we're talking like day one, day two picks. And those guys start, but Eichenberg has had trouble staying healthy. So too has Austin Jackson. Hunt has probably been the most consistent player at right guard. But, you know, and Teron Armstead gutted his way through the season last year as their starting veteran left tackle with a number of injuries. He's got to be healthier this year. But, you know, guys that are 33 years old, it's a hard position to play for 17 games and stay healthy once you're in the tooth.
It seems like, and I get it from us, from where we're at, it's easy for them to say, hey, didn't do anything in the draft. Now, they're doing their best. They're washing through a ton of guys to find out. I mean, they waived offensive tackle Jarrett Horst, offensive lineman Alex Jensen, offensive lineman DJ Scape, all those guys have just gotten waived. So they're washing through as many names as they can get into the building to find, you know, five guys that can play and can play the entire season. But I'm with you, Brownie. You got to pick some young guys up in the draft. I mean, there's always guys with measurables available in the draft. And while they may not be the perfect guy, at least you can bring some guys in that are fresh and, you know what I mean, that don't have this, that maybe can stay healthy, all of that stuff. They're just doing it a different way, I think, than
they're choosing to go the veteran free agent route,
right?
And they're hoping to strike gold with somebody.
And the Bills have done it a bunch of times, but you know, then they also draft a couple of guys every so often as well. I think, and I told you this, and I love the thought of it. The Bills like to get guys, big guys, higher in the draft. Spencer Brown and all these, you know, these, you know, Osiris Torrance. I mean, you got to take guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, trust your process of picking the right ones. Veteran free agents are great. And certainly guys like Mitch Morse are phenomenal. McGovern.
Yep. Connor McGovern.
Is a great, and they, you know, the guys they've done this with in the past, all the way back to John Feliciano, all these guys have really helped. And it's not like you expect to come in and play 15 years, but they're, you know, they can do it. I'm still a big fan of mixing in draft picks.
Well, it's a longer-term investment. You get more time with them to develop them as opposed to guys on one-year flyers.
Right. I think it's so important. You got to do it both. You got to get that's where you start every year.
Well, especially when you have a franchise guy, quarterback.
And if they're telling me they like Tua and they're going to go with him, support the guy.
Yeah.
You know, you got the highest paid receiver room in the NFL. Get some guys to protect your guy.
Mm-hmm. Your concussion. And they haven't even paid Waddle yet. Think about that.
Yeah, but Waddle, this will be his second year, right?
Third year.
Okay, third year. It's gonna be time to get him sewed up.
Yep.
I'm with you though. It's just a different philosophy. It may work for him.
It might. Knowing to his health concerns, I would have been pushing all my chips to the middle of the table. Like, look, I'm not going to pretend to know what the draft board looked like for the Dolphins when they're on the clock, you know, in the third round, and they take Devon Achane, whose skill set is very appealing to anybody. I mean, any running back that runs a 4.32, even if they're 188 pounds, that's an attractive quality. But is it enough to – I mean, that guy's not going to be on the field on third down picking up blitzes. He's 188 pounds. Like, how much does he help Tua? I don't know. For me and my money, I would have tried to find an offensive lineman that, you know, could grow with the club and, you know, help keep that guy from landing on his back or, God forbid, his head.
Right.
Because the guy might be one concussion away from his career being over. It's just, I don't know. I probably would have shifted my resources to better address the guys in front of them, not people that might be lining up behind them or outside of them.
Yeah, I get it. The Dolphins have no reason to think they're doing things wrong.
No.
They had a stretch there in the last year in the middle of the season when they were flying as high as any offense in the league and they were loving life and it looked like they were going to be the team to beat.
But a Tua injury derailed it all.
A Tua injury derailed it all. And so from our little spot at 10,000 feet above where they're at, kind of looking down the big picture, it seems like that, to me, priority one is protecting the guy.
Yeah. Cleveland Browns had the biggest player acquisition of the weekend, Steve, acquiring pass rusher Za'Darius Smith from the Minnesota Vikings along with a 6th and 7th round pick in exchange for a pair of fives in the next two drafts. Smith has been a double-digit sack guy each of the last three seasons in which he has been healthy. 10 sacks last season for Minnesota. The Browns have made it their mission to make their defensive front better because they just got flat run over last year. And they have been investing on the defensive interior. Jadeveon Clowney not brought back. So they needed a pass rusher on the other side to bookend with Myles Garrett. Za'Darius Smith is a hell of a player to bookend with Myles Garrett.
Yeah, he is. And he's going to help. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how the – because they're in a division now. Lamar's back in. He's got some weapons. They're the flavor of the month. The Steelers, the bottom could fall out of the Steelers. They still go 9-8.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just do.
And you got Joe Burrow in the division.
And Joe Burrow.
You better have a pass rush.
Yeah, they got to get better. And I mean, think about this. They could get better and still finish 4th in that division.
Yeah.
I mean, it comes.
I mean,
down,
unless Deshaun Watson has a complete 180 from what he looked like last year,
that to me is a huge enigma. And maybe they know something. Maybe he's going to get better. And Za'Darius Smith's an answer to them for them. But their problems to me are on the other side of the ball.
Yeah,
I know their defense struggled, but they got. I don't know the.
It's almost like a bad karma thing.
I know. I'm starting to think they are cursed. You know what
karma.
I mean?
Well, you know, when you give up the farm to acquire a guy like Deshaun Watson with the allegations against him that he's still facing in civil courts, it came off as unseemly. And
you get a lot of people pulling against him.
You know what I mean? And now you're still dealing with some of the after effects of that, I think. And, I just don't like the karma there at all. It's ugly. Other AFC East news, Steve, the Jets and Quinnen Williams – are reported to be working on a long-term contract extension in the wake of seeing long-term deals for players like Daron Payne with Washington, most recently Dexter Lawrence across the street with the Giants, both guys that play the same position as Quinnen Williams getting monster extensions, you know, 4 years, $90 million. Williams is apparently getting a bit impatient, Steve. His bio on his Instagram page now reads, defensive tackle for ...
Yeah.
With his last tweet being a retweet of the contract Giants Dexter Lawrence signed, Williams apparently sending a message to the Jets. So we'll have to see how that plays out. You know, if you're Quinnen Williams or his agent, I would like to think that you are at least aware enough to know that the Jets are still reworking Aaron Rodgers' contract. That has to get squared away because they can't have him on the hook for 2024 for $107 million, which is what Rodgers' contract currently looks like reworking it with the Packers before the trade. So they got to get that squared away, know where the money's going to be allocated based on 2023, 2024, maybe even 2025 for Rodgers. And then I would think they would be able to say, all right, Quinnen, we squared away Aaron. Now we can take care of you. But, and it's a big but, here is the thing. This is where the Jets get themselves in trouble all the time. And it's why we are constantly seeing rebuilds every 3 or 4 years. In the few instances where they actually drafted correctly or acquired top-flight talent by hook or by crook, and it comes to deciding who to keep and who to let go, more often than not, they don't make the right decision.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, they're rebuilding their roster again and starting all over.
They're going to, if they do, say for instance, and there's no stopping them now. I mean, they got to find a way to get Rodgers' contract under control and get it in the fold financially. But think about it. If they lose a guy like Quinnen Williams because of the Rodgers contract, in 2 years, they're both gone.
Yep.
This year, Quinnen Williams could be gone, or after this year.
Yep.
And then Rodgers is going to be gone in, what, 2 years? Three tops.
Yeah.
You lose both those guys.
And then where are you?
And then you're back drafting a top five again. I mean, you can't let yourself – you got to –
It was
have some foresight.
Yeah, it was easy 2 years ago when the Jets had $110 million in cap space right. to spend money on free agents and make their roster better. That's the easy part. What can they do now when cap space is tight and you got superstars with their hands out?
It's
looking
it's
for big contracts.
It comes down to decisions. You go back 5 years, and the Jets and the Bills were in virtually the identical spot going into the draft, and the Jets were picking ahead of the Bills. They were like, what, third? And the Bills were at 12, and they moved up to 7, right? They take Sam Darnold, mistake. Bills take Josh, not a mistake. And both franchises, from that point on,
I've been on two different trajectories.
They had cap space, and they had draft picks, both of them. One of them made the right picks, and the other one did not. And now they were headed in opposite directions. Now they're trying to get back on – they're trying to shortcut it with Aaron Rodgers. And once again, they have some crucial decisions to make that have nothing to do with Aaron Rodgers. They have to do with Quinnen Williams, the guy they drafted, and Breece Hall, and all those guys.
Yep. Meanwhile, another Jets free agent, former Pro Bowl linebacker Quan Alexander, still unsigned. And after the Jets re-signed Quincy Williams, Quinnen Williams' brother, to a long-term extension, it's unlikely that they're going to pay Quan Alexander any respectable money. He is now visiting the Steelers, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter. So it looks like Quan Alexander will not be a part of that Jets defense again, unless he decides to take chump change to go play for the Jets again, because I'm sure the Jets made him a modest offer, but he's probably looking to do better. So that's Around the NFL, presented by Kaleida Health. Wanted to get to you and let you know what our topic of the day is. The roster, at least of the offseason variety, we know it's going to see some morphs and changes here and there based on needs, and maybe there's a couple of injuries, they got to shuffle the deck a little bit. But we are asking you, based on, you know, some of the up-and-coming players, maybe some of the new additions, maybe a player who had a down season last year and is ready to kind of revitalize his career, which Bills player will arrive in 2023. Maybe it's an under-the-radar guy that really didn't get as many opportunities on the field as maybe some thought he should. Maybe it's somebody, as I said, who had a down year last year but has all the potential in the world. Give us a Bills player that you think will arrive in terms of production and performance in 2023. 803-0550 is the local number to get on board outside the immediate calling area. 1-888-550-2550. We've got nothing but open lines for you and time to talk. If you can't talk on the phone, you can always hit us up on the tweet sheet at OneBillsLive. Find your player. Let us know who it is. Which Bills player will arrive in 2023? Break time for us, but Steve and I back in a second here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. to One Bills Live. Are you okay?
No, I'm not all right.
What's wrong?
Those who watch the show know it's a quintessential Monday. You know, I go in and I'm a diet doctor guy, right? And we got a little fridge out there, and they keep it stocked for us, you know, so we have stuff to drink here on the.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the pull tab on the can of soda snapped off in my hand, right? But then it also got a pinhole. To make a long story short, in trying to save the last diet cola that I had out there, the diet Dr. Pepper that I always drink, the last one was cold in the fridge. I was trying to salvage it because it got broken.
So you're trying to find a way to open it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm wearing it now.
Okay.
So
what was your?
I could not have.
What was your
up.
Second tool of choice to try to pry the can open?
Well, it was a. It's a ballpoint pen. Trying to break the.
That is
I couldn't
risky.
Do it.
That is risky.
So the control room had a laugh at my expense, which is.
You know what is not around much anymore? Like just in the office or things like that? A can opener. People, you know, sometimes people would have can openers and stuff. You know, the kind that you just click the edge of a can to
right.
put the air hole in? That would have helped you. That would have helped you.
But no.
But no. Not nearly as popular as it used to be in the past.
It was, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Every once in a while, my doddering oldness bubbles to the surface, and I look like it.
No pun intended. Right. As effervescent as your soda beverage
That's
apparently
right.
was. We do want to get to the phones, though, at 803-0550. Open line for you there, 1-888-550-2550, as we are asking you which Bills player will arrive in 2023. Someone who's performance and production you believe will take off this coming fall. Leading us off today is Jeff in Buffalo. What do you got for us, Jeff, here on One Bills Live?
Hi, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing good. Well.
All right. My guy is Baylen Spector, and I don't understand why he didn't get on the field more last year after having a great, as far as I was concerned, a great preseason. You didn't see much of him. I equate it to baseball. When a guy is going 3-for-4, and all of a sudden you put in a pinch hitter for him in the ninth inning. So that's my guy is Baylen Spector. So go ahead, discuss.
Yeah, we had him. He surfaced for us when you went back and looked at his athletic stuff from last year's combine. Stuff. He's a really athletic guy. I mean, he tested out really well. Was an active roster member, played special teams last year, was not the first guy to get on the field when Tremaine Edmonds came off for any reason, or even in blowout losses where they tried early in the year where they started getting guys sprinkled in. Spector wasn't a guy that they got in real quick. He got on a couple of times with some injuries and like I said, late in games. But his athleticism speaks volumes. I mean, the guys, they drafted him for a reason. And he played special teams and was on the NFL level athletically. Because he showed that. So, yeah, we have talked about, off the air, Brownie and I have talked about Spector as a guy who has sneaky athleticism. We'll see if he makes the most of these reps that he's going to get in this preseason, because I would imagine, we don't know yet because we haven't seen, I would imagine they're going to rotate these guys through and find a guy. The draft picks,
yes.
Spector, Dodson, A.J. Klein, all of them. They're
Bernard.
All going to get worked through there. Bernard, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, Spector, I do believe he's, first of all, he's got a little bit more body thickness to him than maybe Terrell Bernard. He's kind of more in the Tyrell Dotson body type.
A little taller.
And a little thicker. And he was productive. I mean, he was productive in college. His tackle count went up every single year as a starter. You know, 72 tackles, 10.5 for loss, 4.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles. In his junior year at Clemson, was honorable mention All-ACC, led the team in tackles and sacks. Then in 2021, 85 tackles, 4.5 tackles for loss, 2.5 sacks, another forced fumble, couple pass breakups, and a pick. Honorable mention All-ACC. And that was with missing 2 games due to injury. So he had the body of work coming out of school, 7th-round pick here a year ago, and you know, he was playing on special teams most weeks. I think there were a couple of weeks where he was inactive. You know, he was a fringe weekly active guy. And he played on special teams. Didn't get a lot of looks on the defensive side of the ball during the regular season. But, yeah, there's no reason to not put him firmly in the mix for the starting middle linebacker job. We'll just have to see how it shakes out.
It's really hard to get a handle on what they think about these guys like Dodson, A.J. Klein, Baylen Specter, even Bernard, because they so rarely changed out personnel on the defense. Mm-hmm. Same 11 guys. They changed. Now, we all know they rotated the defensive line out. But once you get in the secondary, unless there was an injury like there was to Micah Hyde or to Poyer or whoever, and Tre'Davious White coming in and out of the lineup at Thanksgiving, there was never any change. Once they started a game, that's who was going to play. Rotate in the D-line, and the linebackers and DBs, they were going to stay on the field. So it was really hard to get a handle on who they liked, who they didn't like, why they liked this guy better than that guy. We never saw him take any reps. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a good answer to say Baylen Specter, but we don't know.
Well, no, but I like the fact that, you know, you got Bills fans thinking beyond the obvious. And I think Baylen Specter in some ways, and this is no knock on him, but I just think because fans haven't seen him on the field on defense, he's kind of an under-the-radar guy for most fans.
Same thing
because
with
Bernard. They haven't seen him outside of preseason last year. So, yeah, I think that's an interesting choice, and I don't think it's an outlandish one by any means because that middle linebacker competition's open. It is open season for the middle linebacker spot, and we know the history of this coaching staff. As much as possible, they give every last person that they believe is worthy a fair shot to prove themselves, and Specter falls into that category, so we shall see. Let's go to Brian in Alabama next. What do you got for us, Brian? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, good afternoon, fellas. How you guys doing?
We're doing well.
So my choice, I think it would kind of be easy to say James Cook, but I'm going to go with Trent Sherfield just because I'm just kind of looking at his tapes in the past. He seems to have better separation and a little bit more speed than Gabe Davis. And I feel like his impact can be similar to what John Brown had for us a few years ago. I'm not saying that they're the exact same player, but just that impact that he could possibly have because you wouldn't be able to target on him as much as they did John Brown when he first came to Buffalo because of all the other weapons that the Bills have now. So Trent Sherfield would be my pick.
Okay. I like the reasoning behind that, Brian. Thanks for the call. I mean, you can say this, Steve. He got probably the most snaps that he's ever had on the offensive side of the ball in his career with Miami last season.
That's right.
On a roster, by the way, where the only two receivers that saw more time on the field than him were Jaylen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. So he was essentially their third guy in the pecking order. And, you know, he comes up with 30 receptions and a couple of touchdowns, I think 417 or so yards, you know, receiving. He produced based on the role he was afforded because he only had 51 targets, you know, the whole season, and he only made 4 starts. So made some plays for them, and it was clear that the coaching staff felt comfortable putting him in there, you know, working in the slot some, working outside some. But you talk to anybody down in Miami, they'll tell you that Coach McDaniel liked what he got out of Sherfield, who – you know, even though he's only like, what is he, 6'1", I think? Yeah, 6'1", 219. I think he plays a little bit bigger than that, particularly in contested situations. And I think he plays faster than he times, too. So yeah, I think there's something there.
The presence he forged for himself in that roster last year is pretty impressive. And you know, that's kind of the role you would envision for him here in Buffalo. If he was going to go in there and compete with Gabe Davis, that's one thing. But also, you know, finding a spot either in the slot or as a fourth wide or whoever that's on the field. If he's not in the first three, it's really intriguing to see that he's already done that. And he, with the limited number of targets he got last year, the 54 targets he got, the guy was a high percentage, high efficiency target. For an offense that you're only going to get so many opportunities.
Right.
I think he's really intriguing for that. I really do. And I'm kind of with you, Brian. I'm kind of excited to see what he can do. You kind of forget he's in the fold. Him and Deontay Hardy,
yeah,
with all the stuff that's
feels
gone
like forgotten
on,
guys.
They feel like forgotten guys because they signed him early in free agency. But those guys are weapons. And they're weapons who looked in their last stop, Hardy in New Orleans and Sherfield in Miami, they looked like guys on the cusp of exploding, just like we're asking today, who's going to arrive. One of these guys is a really good candidate, particularly in an offense that's looking for more outlets.
Let's go back to the phones, and we go to Ron in Dunkirk next. What do you got for us, Ron? You're on One Bills Live.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Sure.
And I think that it's going to be Gabe Davis that arrives this year. Between his injuries last year, slowed him down a ton. It's a contract year, I believe, for him.
It is.
So I think he's going to step up this year.
Okay. And so last year, as we know, Ron, just quick before you go, we know that his catch rate was down. It was 52%. Do you have any lingering concerns about that, or you just think he bounces back and he's back to what we're maybe more used to seeing, a more sure-handed player?
I think he comes back. I think the injuries played a major role in it. He fought through them. And like I said, I believe this is his contract year, which is going to more.
All right.
And to see buddies like Isaiah McKenzie leave the team. You know, I mean, he knows he's got a producer else.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good point. Motivation is always enormous with pro athletes. Highly motivated guys seem to be more successful. That's all there is to it. And it's not rocket science. And millions of dollars on the line is usually a pretty high degree of motivation for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And these guys are no different. So, yeah, it's a good observation. Plus, feeling better. Being healthy, man, it always gives you a nice, just a refreshed approach to the game. He's probably right.
Yeah. And I think there are a lot of people in, among the Bills fan base that are really pulling for Gabe Davis. I think, are they disappointed, with the season he had last year at times? Sure. I think everybody would like to see Gabe be a more consistent playmaker rather than an every other week or maybe every 3 week playmaker. And I'm sure he would say the same thing. He wants to deliver just as much as anybody else would like to see him deliver. So I think there's a lot of people pulling for him to have a big year this season as well. We have to take a break. When we come back, more of your phone calls. John and Snyder, Joe and Cheek DeWaga, you'll lead us off when we return here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. Hey, everybody, the Bills are giving two tickets away to the 2023 home opener, week two against the Raiders. Enter today at buffalobills.com/home opener for the chance to win. Contest runs now through May 16th, which is tomorrow. So hurry up and get online to enter for a chance to win a pair of tickets to the home opener against the Raiders, week two. Be there or be square. Let's get back to the phones where we are asking you, who is the Bills player that you believe will arrive in 2023 in terms of production and performance? Back to the phones we go, into John in Snyder. What do you got for us, John?
Yes, good afternoon. This is slightly off topic, but when it comes time to make the final cuts, the coaches ask the players what they think. Would they ask Diggs who's the toughest guy he has to play against? Would they ask Von Miller who's the hardest offensive lineman that he competes against? I mean, you can only watch tape so long. Do they get input from the players?
Yeah, they wouldn't go to him specifically, John. It would come up in films. The position coach would have conversations every day about the guys they're going against, why they're doing well, why they're not doing well. And it would go about, they start by talking about themselves. You're doing this, you're doing that, we're doing this, we're doing that. And then as you go in one-on-ones against these guys, that comes up through the conversation as you watch film. Because you watch each other practice all day, every day. And then you practice against them. Then you come in and watch it. Then you come out the next day and practice again. Then you watch that too. And it goes day after day after day. So that the opinions of the players are known intrinsically. It's not like a specific conversation, although that would happen most notably. Josh Allen, they say, Josh, you like Sherfield or Hardy better? And he'll say, well, I like Sherfield better for this and this and this. Or he'd say, I like Hardy better because of this, this, and this. He would have a say in who he's throwing the football to.
Like,
not
who
so
do you
much
feel
about,
you have better on-field chemistry with?
It wouldn't
we really
be so,
only have room on the roster to keep one of these guys.
Right. It wouldn't be so much about the DBs he's facing. It would be more about the guys he's throwing to in that case. But you're right. In offensive versus defensive line, and DBs versus wide receivers, that would come up, and the position coaches would know the guy's opinions because of the film conversations.
To Joe in Cheektowaga next. What do you have, Joe?
Okay, I know I'm going to ruffle some feathers here, big time. I know it. But I think the biggest person on the hot seat is McDermott. I mean, our window is closing fast. We've had an elite team for the last 3 years. He hires these coaches. He picks the players. He reminds me of Chuck Knox, a great organizer, brings in quality people, but cannot win the big one. And I know, I respect him as a person, as a man, but what has he won? With all this talent, what has he won?
Joe, why do you think the window's closing?
Everybody's catching up to our offense. Our defense can't stop anybody. Come on. Now, okay.
Wait a minute, Joe. You know we were number two in the league in scoring last year with a brand-new offensive coordinator,
and
right?
And in points against.
And in points against.
What did it get us? When it counted, what did we get? Nothing.
Well, yeah. Because
did we show up in the playoffs?
Well, what? I'll maintain that there were extenuating circumstances affecting their play on the field.
I understand that. But what has... Okay, Leslie Frazier, when Josh was his second year in the league, when he was in a playoff game, was it Houston or... Yeah.
2019,
Houston. Yeah.
We were winning at halftime by 13 points, if I'm not mistaken.
16.
Yep. How could we lose that game?
Well, that's
and
a good... Yeah,
hey,
I get it.
Go to Kansas City. Leslie Frazier never would have made the plane ride home. If I was running it, he never would have made the plane ride home.
Look,
come on.
Yeah. Look, Joe, I understand.
I get it, Joe.
I understand where you're coming from, and the playoff failures are frustrating. I don't think there's any question about it. I don't think it means that your head coach is unqualified. I mean, there was another guy about 20 years ago that they said couldn't win the big one either. You know who his name is? Andy Reid. Went to the NFC title game four times, couldn't get to the Super Bowl.
And they were ready. Once.
And then he finally did.
And
he didn't win the Super Bowl. They lost to New England in 2005. But that was another guy they said couldn't win the big one. So,
yeah, I've said this.
And he ultimately did lose his job in Philadelphia because he couldn't get over the hump. So, look, I understand where you're coming from, but that doesn't mean Andy Reid isn't a good coach, and it doesn't mean Sean McDermott isn't a good coach either.
I've said, and you're right. I'll agree with you. In this point, Joe, they do have an elite team. They've had it, and I said it, they've had it for 3 years. And it's not that, and I don't believe, like a lot of people do, that there's some sort of thing that has to happen to get you over the hump. I do not believe that. There's no magic elixir that's going to wave a magic wand, and all of a sudden this team's good at where they weren't good enough today, but tomorrow they will be. Even when they signed Von Miller, and if he, if he stayed healthy and all that, there's no one of these draft picks that they pick. There's nothing happens that is the magic elixir that says, oh yeah, now this team's good enough. All that happens is when you get to a place when you're in the division round of the playoffs or the AFC Championship or the wild card round of the playoffs, on that day when that game happens, you got to play well. It's no more complicated than that. You've got enough talent to play well. You got enough stars to play well. You're prepared enough to play well. You just got to play well on that day. And some teams meet a team that's really playing well. They're all talented, and you got to play well against a really good team. And some teams don't play well in that situation. Whatever. I'm telling you right now, there is no magic elixir. There is no hump to get over. The Bills have been over that hump for 3 years. What you got to do is just play well on the day that the season is on the line, in the wild card, in the division round, in the AFC Championship, and in the Super Bowl. You got to play well on those days. That's it. It's no more complicated than that. They've been good enough for 3 years. They're going to be that good this year. They're going to be in the conversation again this year. You got to play well on the day when your season is on the line. That's it. It's no more complicated than that. And I don't think there's any some philosophical shortcoming that Sean McDermott has that when it gets to be a game of certain nature, all of a sudden he's just not good enough. No. Come on. No. It's a hard league to win in. They're already good enough, and they're not the only team. There's more than a handful of teams that are good enough to go to and win it. But when it comes down to playing good on that day, you got to be the team that plays better.
Yep.
It's that simple.
And on that day last year, or last January, Cincinnati played better. They did. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, we're going to kick off hour number two with CBS NFL sports writer and co-host of the Pick Six podcast, John Breach, going to join us as we talk with him about everything leading up to the 2023 campaign next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Hour number two here on a Monday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And happy to be joined now by NFL writer for CBS Sports, also co-host of the Pick Six podcast. It is one John Breach joining us on the line. John, thanks for giving us some time, first of all. Second, the schedules come out, and you and your colleague Will Brinson are off and running on final regular season record predictions, and I want to go right to the AFC East, John, because the biggest eye-popper was seeing the Dolphins sitting in the AFC East basement. What can you tell us about that pick by Will?
Yeah, well, the one thing I'll say about the Dolphins is that obviously everyone is assuming it feels like, you know, Tua's going to be able to make it through an entire season healthy, but we don't know that that's going to happen. He hasn't been able to do that yet. So obviously I think you can say the quarterback situation is actually a little bit of a question mark. And then the other part of that is it feels like the Bills are still the head of the class in the AFC East. Obviously the New York Jets have gotten so much better when you're talking about Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. And so it feels like they're going to take a giant step forward in 2023. And then it really comes down to how you feel about the New England Patriots. Do you think that, Bill Belichick is going to let that team lose 11, 12 games and finish in the basement of the division? Or do you think he's going to finally figure things out and get this team back to the playoffs after missing it last season? So I don't think this is a completely – Brinson has made some crazy picks, but I will say he picked the Eagles to go to the Super Bowl last year. And so not all of his – some of his crazy picks pan out. So I don't think this one is that crazy.
And also, with the Jets getting better with Aaron Rodgers, no question about it. But then you look back, and I didn't realize this, they've lost 14 straight to the New England Patriots. Does Aaron Rodgers change that?
I would hope so. I mean, Aaron Rodgers can really exercise a few demons for the Jets. They've never beaten the Eagles. They're 0-12 all-time in franchise history. They play the Eagles this season, like you just said, 14 straight against the Patriots. And I really think Aaron Rodgers is going to relish the competition, relish the thought of going up against the Bill Belichick defense, something he really hasn't gotten to do very many times in his career. And he's got a pretty stacked roster around him. So I would think the Jets can steal at least one of these two games from New England this year.
A lot of people do expect the division to be more tightly packed. And I think the record predictions that you guys have listed there kind of reflect that. Bills 12-5, Jets 10-7, Patriots 9-8, Dolphins 8-9. The other thing to remember here, too, is not only will these teams be beating up on each other, you know, with improved rosters, I think, from top to bottom, most people would agree. But the AFC East also, whether you look at last year's opponent's winning percentage or even some of the advanced analytic models that spin it forward and predict strength of schedule based on how their opponents will look, like the Bills and the Dolphins and the Jets have three of the top, I think, seven toughest schedules in football this year. It's going to be hard to rack up wins.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of those issues is that you look at the divisions they match up against. I mean, every team in the AFC East has to play the NFC East, and the NFC East feels pretty stacked right now. When you have the Eagles, the Cowboys, the Giants, none of those games are going to be easy. And if we were to see the Bills or the Jets or even the Dolphins go 2-2 or 1-3 against the NFC East, it at least feels possible. And then you look at the rest of their schedule. These teams, like you just said, are going to beat up on each other. So it doesn't feel like there's going, we saw Buffalo obviously go 13-3 last season. I would be shocked if we see an AFC East team get to the teens in the victory column in the season, just because of how tough each of their schedules are.
Who has the most to beef about of the 32 teams? Who's got the most to beef about the schedule coming out?
I would say if I'm the 49ers, I'm pretty disappointed right now. They are one of just two teams this year that has to play four teams that will be coming off a bye. So that is four games where that team is going to have an extra week of rest, an extra week to prepare for you. And the Rams are the other team that will have to deal with that. So you're talking about the 49ers. They were in the NFC title game last season, and the NFL schedule maker did them zero favors. And to kind of put that in perspective, there are 12 teams that are playing zero teams that come off a bye. And you're the 49ers, almost a quarter of your schedule. So if I'm San Francisco, I am definitely upset about that one. So I would say that would probably be the biggest beef that any team should have.
Yeah, Rams being the other team that are playing four teams coming off of byes on their schedule this year. And I think any head coach in the league would tell you that is a distinct advantage. Air miles. I think the Bills are 15th in the league in total air miles. So even with their London trip, they're still middle of the pack, and they're playing the AFC West. So pretty fortunate, and no doubt playing the NFC East helps in that regard. But you got, I mean, there's some teams that are logging some major miles this year, like Ravens, Panthers, Broncos, Giants, Titans. Do you know, like, offhand, John, like, how long air miles teams typically fare, or is it often not a factor in the end results when we get to final records?
Usually it's something that impacts the teams at the very top and the very bottom. I've been kind of tracking air miles for about the past 10 years, and we've had the team that has flown the fewest miles, which is the Bengals this year, has averaged 9.6 wins per year over the past 10 years. And the team that has flown the most miles, which was the Buccaneers last year and the Seahawks this year, has averaged under 7 wins. I think it's like 6.4. So you're talking about a 3-win difference when you look at the number one team and the 32nd team. But when you get more in the middle, there's not a huge difference, just because it's such small discrepancies. Teams are flying 300 or 400 miles further than another one. But when it's number one versus number two, you're talking about a team that's flying 22,000, 23,000 miles more. So it gets kind of ridiculous. So yeah, at the top of the bottom, there does tend to be definitely a difference.
That's a big swing.
Yeah, and as you get into this, the more and more we look at this schedule, the more we see, and maybe since 2020 when they were forced to have games on different days, we are seeing the league really spread its tentacles over the weekend to try and get a hold of more and more days to put games on. A triple header on a Monday, Christmas, a Black Friday game, a triple header on Thanksgiving, four different Saturday weekends this year are going to have games. The first time in 40 years where they've had four weekends where they're going to have Saturday games, at least one Saturday game. What do you think? You know, where they go from here, and how prevalent do you think the league will continue to be of just kind of claiming all these holidays and weekends for their games?
Well, it does seem like they keep dipping their toe in the water. With Christmas, it was let's have one game, and then it became a doubleheader. Then last year it became a tripleheader, and now it's a Monday tripleheader. And so it does seem like they're going to see how far they can go. And even with the days of the week where, all right, Amazon wants a Black Friday game. Well, we've never really done anything on Friday. We're already taking over every other holiday. Why not Black Friday? And I think the big test will come next year when we see Christmas on a Wednesday. I know the NFL scheduling guru Mike North said that right now the NFL would probably lean against putting games on Christmas if it's on a Wednesday. But look, if we go out this year and that triple header is drawing 30 million viewers per game, I think money signs are going to light up in the NFL's eyes. They're going to think, hey, how can we make a Wednesday triple header work? Because we don't want to just throw this away if we don't have to. So I do think if we see a triple header on Christmas next year, that the NFL will just do anything and try to take over any day of the week they can.
Talking with John Breach, NFL writer for CBSSports.com. And, you know, I try to, after I take a long look at the Bills schedule, I try to really go through with a fine-tooth comb, you know, the rest of the division teams in the AFC East. And I do find it interesting, John, that you've got a Dolphins team who's got to start with their first two on the road, and they're no cupcakes. I mean, they're at the Chargers, so a cross-country flight to start the season. Then they're at the Patriots. Their first four road games are at Chargers, at Patriots, at Bills, at Eagles. I'm kind of warming up to the 8-9 record prediction that
Yeah, it doesn't seem so crazy because, look, if they get off to a rough start, we don't know how they're going to react. And that you just read out the schedule. I mean, that could be 1-3, 0-4. I don't think either of those would be very surprising. And on the flip side, when you look at Buffalo's schedule, kind of just to start the season off, if I'm getting Aaron Rodgers and the Jets in week one, I'm absolutely thrilled. I mean, we don't know what kind of chemistry Aaron Rodgers is going to have with his receivers yet. We don't know how comfortable he's going to look running that offense in New York. I know it's Nathaniel Hackett's offense, but you're running it with different guys with an offensive line you might not necessarily trust. And then you look at the Bills in week two, you get a Raiders team that has to fly across the country in a 10 a.m. Pacific time slot where the Raiders traditionally aren't good. And that's a team that went 2-7 on the road last year. And then obviously the Commanders feels like a winnable game. So you look at the first three games and it really feels like the Bills could start off 3-0. And then when you look at the other teams in the division and their first few games, I think that's where Buffalo can really separate themselves, considering, you know, this division could be tightly raced this year.
And the other part about that, the Jets, they're one of the teams that finished the season with two road games. I know that they've got two roadies, you know, the Steelers, the Falcons, and the Rams are the only other teams to finish on the road the final 2 weeks. If the Jets are trying to keep pace with Buffalo, they're going to have to finish on the road. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just picturing maybe if they're in the hunt and maybe they're only a game and a half back at Buffalo at the end of the season, now you got to play two road games at the end. That doesn't help your case necessarily.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, when you're staring at the schedule going into week 17, week 18, and maybe you're tied for first place or a game out of first place, and you know you have to go on the road in those final two games when Buffalo, New England, and Miami all have at least one game at home during that span, you're definitely a little worried. And you have to go on the road to Cleveland, which I've heard the weather's not too nice there in early January. And you have to go to Foxborough, which same thing. So you're probably going to get two bad weather games in those last 2 weeks on the road. And so, yeah, that's definitely some rough sledding for the Jets to end the season.
Yeah, and as we got this, there's so much we don't know, but there is something we do know. The draft just happened. We kind of get a handle on where these really good college players are going to go, where they're going to settle into. You made a nice bold prediction on your rookie of the year. Tell us about Anthony Richardson.
Yeah, look, Anthony Richardson, I think the one thing you want if you're looking at rookie of the year, as far as the quarterback goes, is you need someone who's going to play right away, who is going to be out there for all 17 games. And I think the Colts have made it pretty clear that Anthony Richardson is going to be out there. We saw him at the combine. He's an athletic freak. And the other part is that he plays in a division that doesn't have, this great team, where the Bills are a great team in the AFC East. The Chiefs are a great team in the AFC West. The Bengals are a great team in the AFC North. And yet Jacksonville's a good team. But look, you get six games against those teams in your division, and they all feel somewhat winnable. So I think if Anthony Richardson can just lead the Colts to six or seven wins, I mean, he doesn't even have to get them to the playoffs. I think he can absolutely win rookie of the year. And it does seem like this team has enough talent to get to 6-11 or 7-10, which would be an improvement over last year. You're a rookie quarterback. You start all 17 games, and I feel like he can put up some pretty good numbers.
Yeah, and then despite all of that, you know, while maybe individually his performance is good, I know that the hope for the Colts, even in an AFC South that isn't exactly a battle of the Titans, no pun intended, you guys got the Jaguars kind of handling that division without much resistance, because every other team in the AFC South, at least according to your colleague Will Brinson, he sees them all finishing under 500. I don't think that's a big deal for the Texans or a Titans team that's expected to be down this year. I think a lot of people thought the Colts might be able to get more than four wins, but I don't know, maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a Jacksonville fan, you have to be thrilled looking at this. And Brinson has Jacksonville going 11-6. And by the way, he predicted them to win the division last year. Yeah. So again, one of those crazy Brinson predictions paying off. But you do look at the rest of that division. You're talking about a Colts team that's going to likely be starting a rookie quarterback with Anthony Richardson, a Texans team that's likely going to be starting a rookie quarterback with C.J. Stroud, and the Titans team, who we don't even know who they like at quarterback, probably Ryan Tannehill starting most of the season. But if they struggle, maybe they throw Will Levis in there. So the Titans seem kind of like they're having an identity crisis right now. So it does feel like Jacksonville is far and away the best team in the division, but it's not a strong division. So that still makes them maybe the fifth or sixth best team in the AFC.
When you look at these divisions, like in the AFC, you've seen, you know, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Buffalo Bills, the Kansas City Chiefs. You go in, which of the divisions around the league, either AFC or NFC, which do you think is most up for grabs this year?
I would probably have to go to the NFC. I think that the NFC South might be the most intriguing division, because you look at Tampa Bay, they won that division with a losing record last year, 8-9. Tom Brady's gone. So now who's going to steal the mantles? Is it Derek Carr and the Saints? It feels like they probably are the best bet at this point. But I mean, the Falcons got 7 wins last season. People were expecting them to win 2 games. Arthur Smith decides he's going to turn the clock back and just run the ball like it's 1964. And that panned out. And that offense actually looked pretty smooth for most of the season. And then obviously the Carolina Panthers are in there, who they feel like they have a very talented roster. And if they can get their quarterback situation figured out, you know, if Bryce Young pans out, that team could be really good. So I feel like the NFC South is probably the most up for grabs.
And look, I know this offseason the Detroit Lions have been kind of a sexy pick, and apparently they were a sexy pick as far as the NFL schedule makers were concerned as well, because they got them playing Week 1 in the kickoff game against the defending Super Bowl champs. How much were your eyebrows raised by Detroit being the pick for that spot on that stage?
Yeah, I was totally shocked there. I mean, this is one of those you spit out your coffee. And I wasn't even drinking coffee. That's how crazy this one was. This is, you're talking about a Lions team that, I mean, you look at last year's game, you know, we've seen the Buccaneers and the Cowboys in this game recently. So it's usually 2 headline teams that the NFL puts there, but it feels like they kind of changed their philosophy this year. And they said, you know what, that Week 1 game is going to get huge ratings no matter who we put there. So let's not do Chiefs Eagles. Let's not do Chiefs Bengals. Let's not do Chiefs Bills. We'll save those for later the season. And we'll just throw the Lions in there. People kind of like them. They're plucky. No one has negative or positive feelings about the Lions. They're just indifferent. Hopefully this will turn into the Patrick Mahomes, Jared Goff battle we saw a few years ago when the 54-51 game. So, I was absolutely shocked, but I don't hate the pick. I think the Lions could be fun to watch this season, and why not watch them in Week 1? Because I feel like that might be the only week where most of America watches an entire Lions game.
Good stuff, John. Thanks so much.
Yep, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, that's John Breach, NFL writer for CBSSports.com, and got a lot of stuff up there about the schedule around the league, not just one team, but they kind of assess some of the scheduling quirks that are out there. Like the Lions, for example, are playing on 3 Thursdays. It's not just the kickoff game. They obviously have the Thanksgiving game every year. And then they have another Thursday game. All in the first 12 weeks of the season, they got 3 Thursday games. So little scheduling quirks like that. John and some of the other writers at CBSSports.com kind of dice it up and just present it to you. But I always find the schedule that's tough at the start of the season, how do teams respond to that? And, Steve, I'm just telling you, you remember a few years ago when I told you that the Dolphins had a tough start to the schedule in terms of their opponents, and they did not qualify for the playoffs? Brian Flores gets fired, even though they finished strong. And maybe there were some other circumstances behind that, as we would find out later. But this year, it reads kind of the same for the Dolphins. The start of their schedule is tough. 3 of their first 4 on the road, and it's Chargers, Patriots, and Bills. And then their 4th road game is against the Eagles 2 weeks later.
I think this is the kind of season, the way it's, you know, kind of lays out for the Dolphins. There could be some enormous pressure in that building in the first 6 weeks of that season.
I mean, even that Giants home game is not a gimme.
Well, what happens if, you know, the Panthers come in and just play well? You know, I mean, if they have, you know, certainly the Patriots are no gimme. The Chargers are fully, are really talented. They're going to get them on week one when they're really healthy. The Broncos, okay, no question the Miami will think be the favorite in that game. Bills and Giants and Panthers. Giants and Panthers, I still think, are still a question mark. But, yeah, if the Dolphins go too deep into that schedule and don't have a 500 or better record,
they're in trouble.
I don't know if they're in trouble, but the pressure's going to mount. And you just don't get the feeling that there's that much patience for a Mike McDaniel who, you know, is kind of that – he's not the dynamic leader. He's not the kind of guy the fans rally around. The players seem to like him a lot. They played very well for him last year. Got him to the postseason. Yeah, I really felt like there was no time last year where the pressure was really pounding on those guys. And if they get to a point where they're too deep into the season where they're not above 500, I think that changes fast.
Well, and the reason why is you say, okay, they got all these road games at the beginning of the year, and four of their last five are at home.
Might be too late.
Well, right. And even if it isn't, look who they have at the end of the season. They've got the Jets at home. That's not easy. Cowboys at home, at the Ravens, and then the Bills to finish. Like, if you're two or three games under 500 and you get to week 15, just call it.
Some of
DOA, dead on arrival some for of the
that's
Dolphins.
Some of that's going to be on how good the Jets are playing, how the Cowboys are doing. You got to think the Cowboys are going to be at least in the hunt. The Ravens have every reason to believe they're going to be, like, at the top of that division. And of course, the Bills.
The Bills are
going to be thinking you'd be. It's not out of the realm of possibility. The Bills are thinking number one seed, right? So
yeah, they might need that game. Is what you're saying? Yeah.
So those are four games to end the season. If they need those, if they need to go 3-1 to get in, that's a tall order.
I mean, those are all like quality teams. The Ravens did not make the playoffs last year, but. I think if Lamar is healthy throughout the season, most people would pick the Ravens to make the playoffs.
Now, there's a chance, you know, Lamar may not be on the field at that deep.
Tua might not be either.
If Tua is not on the field.
Forget it. Mike White, let's go. He's their backup.
Yeah.
Mike White. Oh, man. That's the thing that I do. After I kind of digest the Bills schedule, I go to the rest of the teams in the division and just kind of dissect things. And I was looking at the Miami schedule over the weekend going, man alive, that is a bear. It is a bear of a schedule. Like, there is no – I mean, there might be a couple of games where you're like, all right, Dolphins should have that one. But then it's like at Eagles, at Chiefs, it's like, oh, whoa. Like,
yeah. It's – I mean, they got the Titans and stuff in there mixed in there. But –
There's some toughies in there for them, for sure.
Here's the thing. If they get to that point of the season, and it could happen, if they get out to a lightning start and come down the stretch and they got those four games left, it may be just whether they're going to be, you know, the 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7 seed, you know, if they lose those games. But if they come in there at 500 with those, you know, if they come in there at 6-6 with those four games left, or I guess 6-7, or 7-6.
It's going to be a lot to
ask.
It's going to
be a lot. It's going to be a lot.
Yeah.
If they got to get to 10 wins with those four games left and they're only sitting at 7.
And the Jets don't exactly have an easy start to the schedule either, Steve. It's Bills at home, at Cowboys, home against New England, home against the Chiefs. That's their first 4 weeks, man.
Yeah.
That's just, woo!
Yeah.
Better for the Bills. So it's going to be really important for the Bills to take advantage of their schedule in the first month of the season, where three of their first four games are at home. And they're not exactly against total juggernauts. You got the Commanders and the Raiders in that first month stretch. Put some distance between you and the rest of the division early, and then hope you can sustain it when the schedule gets tougher.
For whatever reason, there always seems to be those games. Well, like the two of the three losses they had last year, the Dolphins game and the Minnesota game, where it's like the game's over and you're like, how did they lose that game? You know, so you got to
can't have those.
Yeah, you got to factor that in, right? And that's the way it always looks. With a team like the Bills have, that's always the way these losses look. It's like, how do they lose that?
How did that happen?
How did that happen? And, you know, you got to get around, get your mind around that, because it's, it, you know, they don't lose very many. And even the ones that they do lose look like flukes, mm-hmm. which is why a lot of people, like you know, Joe, who called in and said, you know, they don't have what it takes to get over. There ain't no hump. They just got to play well. It's what gives those people ammunition to say they don't have what it takes, or they're not going to win the big one, or they can't get over the hump, or whatever it says, because they lose the games they lose look like the Dolphins game in 90-degree heat, the Minnesota game where they go into the fourth quarter with a 17-point lead and have two game-stopping plays go catastrophically wrong to lose that game. I mean, it's like one
in overtime.
In overtime. And so it's so those kind of things happen, and so people think there's some sort of mystical event or thing that has to take place before they'll ever get be able to win the championship. It's not the case. Although, you know, but stuff like this gives those people that idea because games like that pop up on the Bills' schedule. The Bills aren't going to go 17-0, but they're going to be tough out just like they always are. And these schedules, and you come out and you look at the rest of the division, it's not just the Bills that have a tough schedule. It's the rest of them too.
We have to step aside here, but we're back to your phone calls when we return. Mark in West Seneca is going to lead us off as we are asking you, who is the Bills player that you believe will arrive in 2023 in terms of performance and production? Your picks next at 803-0550 when we return here on One Bills Live. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on a Monday. Time to go back to the phones where we are asking you today, which Bills player will arrive in 2023 in terms of production and performance? And we go to the phones and lead off with Mark in West Seneca for this segment. What do you got, Mark?
Hey, Steve. Hey, Chris. How you doing today?
Good.
That's good. Hey, just so you guys know, when either one of you goes on vacation, it just ruins my day. So I'm proposing a referendum vote that you guys don't give vacation.
Yeah, okay.
Bills Mafia can vote on it. What do you think?
Yeah, maybe. Uh-huh.
Anyway, my breakout guy is Russo. I think it's going to be a long overdue change in the philosophy of the defense having Sean there. Leslie did a great job, but the history of what he did here shows great coordinator during the regular season, huge drop-off in the playoffs when the competition got really tough. Give him a little bit of a pass last year with all the injuries, but still not really good in the postseason. So I'm looking for Russo. I think there's going to be a lot of different packages. I think there's going to be different blitz packages from Sean, from different areas, freeing guys up, not only Greg. So we'll see what happens. I really couldn't pick anybody on the offensive side of the ball. And again, first-year coordinator, Dorsey, his record shows great at the beginning of the year. The offense looked like it was evolving downward by the end of the season. And if you look at the games, we scored second amount of points in the league. But half of those games, I would say, were when Josh had to put on the Superman coat and go win the game and put points on the board and do everything. Hence, that's why we needed another weapon, everybody says. But in my estimation, Brandon Bean has put a roster together now for three seasons, fully talented, that can win the Super Bowl. And I've been beating this drum for quite a while now, and I know I've mentioned it with you guys. For me, this whole season falls on the shoulders of both of our coordinators. The players are there. We have, if you want to call it a hole, I'm not even sure it's a hole. The only suspect spot right now is middle linebacker, and that's only because we don't know who's going to be playing there. And to be honest, I wouldn't be upset if A.J. Klein, the veteran guy who showed last year he still had something left in the tank, ends up taking that job. So I think Sean's going to be a breath of fresh air on the defensive side of the ball, and let's hope and pray Dorsey can really utilize all the tools that he has at his disposal. Because I don't believe the tools are maybe a little bit better this year, but he had a lot of tools last year too, and there were guys that did not get used properly in my estimation. So that's my opinion, guys. I appreciate it, and Sorry about the vacation thing, but
yeah,
well, you do ruin my day when you're not there.
Yeah, no worries.
Sorry, no problem. Thanks for listening anyway, being a regular listener. Greg Rousseau is a great point. It could really help him. The change of coordinators, having Von Miller's presence and a year under his belt with that. You'd love to see him have a breakout season and get a double-digit sacks. The coordinator thing we've talked about at length, we don't know what that's going to look like with Sean McDermott. If you spin it in a positive way, Sean McDermott's a head coach because he was a great defensive coordinator. We'll see if that translates backwards, where he goes from head coach and now takes it over as well as a coordinator, because he wasn't a head coach slash coordinator in Carolina. He was just a coordinator. So we'll see if being the head coach slash coordinator if he can do it. And the rest of the thing, it always comes down to the coordinators. Those guys are crucial in every team. I'm not really willing to sit here and poke holes in what Leslie Frazier did or in what Ken Dorsey did as well last year. I'm not going to poke holes in either one of those guys. They had, because you look back and you look at the numbers, it's hard to poke holes in what the Bills did on either side of the ball last year. You can certainly bemoan how the season ended, no question. But as far as putting together a team that was a wrecking crew, the Bills did it, and their coordinators had a lot to do with it last year. So you can cry about how the season ended, and we all were disappointed in it. It's hard to poke holes in what they did offensively or defensively, at least statistically. With your naked eye, you might say something, and I don't know who you mean was being used wrong last year. I mean, you had a lot of guys that had a lot of opportunity that didn't do too well with it. A lot of drops offensively, a lot of fumbles and turnovers offensively. I mean, you can't point that at the coordinators too much, in my opinion. So this team has every reason to believe, and fans have every reason to believe, they're going to be a tough out again this year, and we'll see.
The Rousseau pick is good for a couple of reasons. Number one, if you look at his season last year, the guy has 4 sacks in his first 4 games, then gets the high ankle sprain, and he was never right after that. He has 4 sacks the rest of the season. Now, Von Miller's absence from the lineup down the stretch certainly didn't help his cause either. But beginning of the year, the guy was productive. He was turning in plays, and then he has the high ankle sprain, and he wasn't right for about 6-8 weeks, and just kind of misses some time and then guts it out. But I think he's an example, or could be an example, of year 3 breakout guys that we've seen under the McDermott regime. Whether it's Matt Milano in year 3, Tremaine Edmonds in year 3, Josh Allen in year 3, Taron Johnson in year 3, Dawson Knox in year 3. There's a long list of guys who have had breakout performance-type seasons in year 3. Well, this is year 3 for Greg Rousseau. I know people are hoping for big things from him. It's also year 3 for Spencer Brown, and I think people are hoping for big things from him. So, yeah, I think it's a good pick to have in terms of a guy who will, quote-unquote, arrive in 2023. I think people are certainly hoping for that. And some of how McDermott maybe morphs and changes the look of this defense will impact how well he can perform. I think a lot of us were of the opinion, or anticipating anyway, that we would see Rousseau kick down inside more in obvious passing situations and put another end on the field on the edge. Because in his 1 year as a starter at Miami, he had enormous success rushing from the interior in obvious passing situations. I don't think we saw that as much as we anticipated last year. Maybe McDermott utilizes him more in that position in those situations, you know, and he eats a little bit more this year.
Yeah, I'm it's really an intriguing year for the Bills because of Sean McDermott's role as defensive coordinator and play caller, because of their draft picks, because of what they did in free agency offensively, and where they're coming from. It's, you know, I it's hard not to have a good feeling about where they are. And these people, and we've had a caller today who said that, you know, the window's closing down. I don't see it. I mean, I don't see it. I'm sorry. They're going to be better than they were last year. They're going to be better this year than they were last year. Now, so are some other teams, and it's going to be a mix-up. But I'm telling you, their health as a team notwithstanding, they're on everybody's schedule, and nobody's looking past this club. This is a game, when you play the Buffalo Bills, most of these teams are going to circle it. That's a big one, and there's good reason for it. Last year was an unbelievable regular season until like we say, you know, it got sidetracked on the Monday night game in Cincinnati. But I'm telling you what, they are going to be an absolute problem, a handful for all these teams here or wherever they play and whoever they play. So it's going to be a fun year. Like I said, there's a lot of things that are really intriguing about this year that are different, most notably Sean McDermott's role.
Yeah. Be interesting to see. I think all of us are curious. I mean, we were all curious about the offense last year under Dorsey and how that might look. And, you know, the results in terms of statistics was pretty convincing. Although I will agree with Mark that the offense did look like a heavier lift come the second half of the season for various reasons, injuries being among them. How does the defense look this year with McDermott calling the plays? It's going to be just as intriguing and interesting as the offense was last year under Dorsey and the anticipation of what that would look like. We take a break here. Steve and I close it out with one more segment. We'll crack open some final thoughts on the tweet sheet next. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and wanted to take a couple of tweet sheet responses to pass along. Which Bills player will arrive in 2023 in terms of production and performance? Bills Chat Podcast says, Kaiir Elam. Why? Second year in the system. Showed very high level of ball skills and limited reps last year. Entire secondary will benefit from Hyde and Poyer being healthy and Trey White returning to form. You got to think about that, Steve. Like, the secondary last year was a mess in terms of player availability.
Right. Micah Hyde out for the season in week two. Trade.
Doesn't show up until Thanksgiving.
Doesn't show up until Thanksgiving, the same game that Vaughn goes down. Yeah. And he's gone for the year. So you get Trey White, but you lose Vaughn Miller for the season.
Poyer missed 5 games.
Poyer missed 5 games. Plus, when he was playing in the last half of the year, he was dragging around all kinds of injuries.
He was holding leverage. Everything together with duct tape.
Yeah, right. So, yes, you're right. Kaiir Elam's a great guess. It'll be interesting to see how Christian Benford comes back and acclimates back in. He was injured most of last season as well. Had a busted hand and I guess something. He had 2 different injuries. So all of that stuff combined, if Kaiir Elam gets on the field, stays on the field, is consistent, you got to think his level is going to ascend because that's the kind of guy he is.
Finished strong, too.
And he finished really strong. It's a good call.
Yeah.
You'd love to see it if it happens.
Dominic on the tweet sheet said, Greg Rousseau was already a very solid player years 1 and 2. This year he breaks into top 10 territory. So he agrees with our last caller, Mark, about Rousseau, and I think that's a good pick as well. Eric says, despite tight end traditionally taking a few years to develop, Dalton Kincaid gets my vote. He's not a hand-in-the-dirt 3-point stance tight end and is practically a wide receiver with a tight end position listed on paper. More than 70% of his snaps at Utah last season, he ran pass routes and not blocking. You think Kincaid can get on the field and make that much of a difference that fast? That's a big ask, even for a first-round pick, especially here. Rookies don't get on the field fast.
It would be a change in, well, not a change, but it would be against what we have seen other rookies offensively do. The last guy we saw do that was Gabe Davis. Back when his rookie season, he got on the field almost immediately for some regular reps. Anybody else from Khalil Shakir to James Cook struggle to get on the field.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if they can.
And speaking of James Cook, that's who Scott picked. He said, James Cook heading into year 2, he's ready to silence the haters. Big time relief for Josh Allen. That was going to be my pick. So I'll make that now. James Cook. There you go. Do you have anybody?
Yeah, I think it's one of the new guys, Sherfield or Hardy.
Okay.
One of those two guys.
I like it.
Yeah.
That's it for us on a Monday. We'll see you tomorrow, Tuesday, 1 p.m. Be there or be square.